Breeze in the gun here. 3-by-1 to his left. Drops back to throw. Steps in the pocket. Throws over the middle. Caught. Jared Cook breaks the tackle. 10, 5, touchdown. Jared Cook, 38 yards. And the Saints strike in their opening drive.
The battle between the Niners and Saints did not disappoint. But what few saw coming was an offensive explosion, with both teams scoring 94 combined points. Today, we explain how it happened. Then, did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, December 9th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Bill, we had the game of the year today. I'm speaking, of course, of Dolphins Jets.
10 field goals, Ryan Fitzpatrick overturned. Who could fault you for being so excited about Jets Dolphins?
Bill Barnwell is a senior football writer at ESPN and the host of The Bill Barnwell Show. The second most exciting game, Bill, the one we are actually going to discuss today, was Niners Saints, which brought us an offensive explosion that reminded me in some ways of that now legendary Monday night game between the Chiefs and the Rams, which is something we really haven't seen a lot of this year, even though it was supposed to change football. These two teams combined for more points and yards in the first half than we have actually seen in 5 years. And what was especially remarkable about it, and maybe even more remarkable than that Monday night game, was these were two really good defenses, right? I mean, the Saints defense ranks 7th in efficiency, according to Football Outsiders. The Niners defense is 2nd. So while I think we all thought this would be a good game, I don't think we saw 48-46 coming. So let's start with the victors. How did San Francisco pull this off?
This was sort of the perfect example of how devastating and how effective the Kyle Shanahan offense can be. I mean, this is an offense that we know they want to work on play action. And Jimmy Garoppolo was 11 of 14 for 191 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a perfect passer rating off of play action. Kyle Shanahan has been the best first down coach in probably modern football history. The Falcons offense, during that Super Bowl season, the Falcons offense was the best on first down. For the data we have going back to the 80s, they were remarkable. The Niners are the best first down offense in football, and they were great on first down on Sunday. But the simplest thing, the simplest element of football, no matter what kind of offense you're working with, no matter how talented your players are, is let's just attack the weakest players on the other team. And that's what the Niners really did in this game. It was going after the two weakest links in the New Orleans secondary, Eli Apple and CJ Gardner-Johnson, who's the rookie who's been playing mostly slot cornerback. And every team knows, hey, we should attack the weakest players on the other team. But I think what Kyle Shanahan and actually what Sean Payton as well did in this game was go about it in creative ways and do a really excellent job of isolating those players one-on-one and then taking advantage of them in coverage.
What's so remarkable about seeing the Niners offense in particular put up this kind of performance is outside of George Kittle, who is arguably the best tight end in the NFL, they don't really have many elite skill players. And I would say that includes the quarterback. What is it about Kyle Shanahan's scheme that makes the offense so deadly despite the absence of elite talent?
Yeah, I mean, there's not that sort of Julio Jones immediate impact player. But what Shanahan and John Lynch have done over the last 3 years is really build an infrastructure based on speed. At every position, they have someone who can win one-on-one and create a big play downfield. We saw that with the passing game. We saw that with their running backs. Matt Breida is one of the fastest running backs in all of football. Raheem Mostert burned the coverage downfield on a trick play for a long touchdown pass.
Garoppolo in the gun. 2-by-2 formation, Emmanuel and Kittle right. Debo goes in orbit motion, inside handoff to Mostert. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Everyone they have is someone who you have to worry about creating a big play. And so then when you have an offense that's built around play action, built around the outside zone, and built around making you think that they're going to run the ball over and over again, and then taking advantage of your safeties cheating up into the box, or your linebackers getting lazy, or your linebackers trying to sell out to stop the outside zone, and they run a reverse, or they run an end around, or they chuck the ball downfield, there's going to be trouble.
So far this season, the Niners' defense has been very consistent, and I'd say Jimmy Garoppolo has been the variable on this team. At times very good, at times turn the ball over. Tonight, the defense got obliterated and Garoppolo had arguably his best performance of the season. Does that give you more faith in him going forward, especially as the Niners get into the playoffs?
I mean, Mina, do you remember how much of almost a joke Jimmy Garoppolo was during the preseason?
The famous 5 interception practice, right?
The 5 consecutive interception practice, 5 consecutive plays with an interception in practice. And then that preseason game where he looked totally out of sorts, looked absolutely like he wasn't going to play. I mean, there was a public perception that Jimmy Garoppolo might not have this job at this point of the season, that it might be, you know, possibly Nick Mullins' job or CJ Beathard's job. There was this perception that maybe it didn't really matter who you plugged in at quarterback for the Niners. It was more about the running game. And their running game was fine on Sunday. And obviously, they did create a lot of big plays, but so much of that was through the passing game. And so many of Jimmy Garoppolo's throws were not just throws under pressure. They were throws under extreme pressure and throws that were perfectly on stride. He hit plays downfield. He hit plays off of play action. He can win a shootout with a Hall of Fame quarterback on the road when his defense does not have his back. And I don't know if we knew that about Jimmy Garoppolo before this point.
Well, on the other side of the ball, what the Saints offense did might be more impressive in some ways, given how good the San Francisco defense has been all year. At halftime, New Orleans had scored 27 points. That's as many points as San Francisco has given up all year in any game, the total game. What did Sean Payton and this New Orleans offense do against San Francisco that made them so successful?
Again, it wasn't like some grand idea that they'd never seen before. It was the same thing. Let's attack the weakest part of the opposing defense. And in this case, it was injuries. It was Jaquiski Tartt's replacement, Marcel Harris, who was playing safety. So much of this game for the Saints early on was attacking Marcel Harris. The first touchdown was Jared Cook, where Jared Cook snuck in front of Marcel Harris and then broke a tackle for a touchdown. Second touchdown was a blown coverage where the Niners played a 2-deep coverage, which they don't typically play all that much of. The third one, Josh Hill touchdown catch, where Marcel Harris was fooled in coverage. And then even later in the game, Harris did improve as the game went on, but on the final drive, Richard Sherman was missing with a hamstring injury. And the Saints immediately picked on Emmanuel Mosley, who was his replacement. On the first play, the Niners just did not cover Ted Ginn. He was left wide open on the sidelines, and it was the easiest 25 yards you will ever get on a possible game-winning drive.
Ted Ginn is wide open.
Breeze, quick throw. Ted Ginn uncovered at the 40, the 35, and out of bounds around the 30-yard line.
That's who would have been covering when Sherman got off the field. They never saw it. Ted Ginn jogged back, and they were in that 3-by-1 look. Drew saw it right away, and Ted Ginn was wide open.
It seems simple, but again, the Saints do such a good job of taking this simple concept and exploiting it over and over and over again.
As of Sunday, with the Seahawks losing, San Francisco has the number one seed in the NFC. New Orleans has the third seed. So there's a chance these two teams could meet again, perhaps in the NFC Championship. Will we get another thriller?
I don't think we'll get the same sort of thriller. I don't think we're going to get another 90-point game for a couple of reasons. I think number one, the injuries aren't going to be the same on both sides. We saw key players missing from both teams. I would figure they're going to be healthier on defense the second time these two teams play. But even more so, this first game was in New Orleans. And now a rematch between these two teams is much more likely to be in San Francisco. And that is a big concern if you're a Saints fan, because Drew Brees, during his time with the Saints, is 6-1 at home during the postseason, with the one loss coming to Jared Goff and the Rams last postseason, and 1-5 on the road as Saints quarterback. So I would be very concerned that the Saints offense, as good as it has been, might not be as effective if this rematch is in San Francisco.
Thanks, Buzzkill.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, with the college football playoffs final ranking set, who's in, who's out, and how did the committee decide? The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
LSU, the Bayou Bengals, making it into the playoff for the first time. They are number one. We'll go to Atlanta, championship game in New Orleans. Last 3 times we've had a national championship game in New Orleans, LSU has been there.
All right, Heather, you were in Dallas for Selection Day. What was the reaction to the final ranking?
Well, I think it was pretty much as expected, with LSU at number 1, Ohio State number 2, Clemson number 3, and then Oklahoma at number 4.
Heather Dinich covers college football for ESPN. We caught up with her right after the 4 teams in the college football playoff were named on Selection Day.
The selection committee spent a lot of time debating the 1 and 2 spots. That is what was the, that's what kept them up late at night this year. But beyond that, it was pretty straightforward. There wasn't really any question about who the top 4 was going to be. But when you look at the 6 rankings now in totality, 3 spots at number 1 went to Ohio State, 3 went to LSU, including the final one and the most important, obviously. But that just goes to show that this weekend's debate for the final number 1 spot was a microcosm of just how close those 2 teams were all season long.
What do you think ultimately ended up being the difference between LSU and Ohio State?
People have to remember that things can and do change drastically on championship game weekend when the entire selection committee is sitting there together at the Gaylord Texan Resort on the 4th floor in this room with 5 flat screen TVs watching all these games together. And when they were sitting there on Saturday afternoon, they were watching LSU completely dismantle Georgia in all phases of the game.
3rd down, goal to go from the 4. Shotgun snap, Joe. Quick slant, fire. Catch made. Marshall's got it in the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers!
While Ohio State later that night, meanwhile, had to come back from a 21-7 halftime deficit against a really gritty Wisconsin team.
Possible blitz being shown by the Badgers. Fields with the ball. Back to throw. Looking left. Looking middle of the field. Fires middle of the field, and it's caught at the 5. And dancing into the end zone goes Ohio State's receiver, K.J. Hill, on a touchdown pass of 16 yards as he weaved his way through the Badger defense. And Ohio State has their...
Now, the committee members don't sit in the room at that time and say, well, if this happens, then we're going to do that. They sit there and wait till the results unfold. But that is literally a lasting impression in their minds. So how the SEC championship and the Big Ten championship played out was a huge factor in their decision, because as soon as the Big Ten game is over, they literally walk right next door, sit down at their seats at their computers, and start the process for determining those top teams. And Selection Committee Chair Rob Mullins talked about how just impressed the committee was with LSU quarterback Joe Burrow.
Late pressure comes, Burrow spins away, now runs back to his right. looking downfield and throwing on the run. Has a man open. Justin Jefferson at about the 43-yard line, far side. Cuts back across the middle of the field. Foot race inside the 20, 15, and 10. Brought down around the 9-yard line.
The improvement of their defense, which had been under the committee's microscope going into that game. And meanwhile, Ohio State struggled a little bit. So you combine the eye test in the final conference games along with LSU's resume, which was comparable to Ohio State's, but in the end, it was a little bit better because they had 4 wins against teams ranked in the top 13 of the committee's top 25.
Heather, there were various points over this weekend when it looked like the committee's decision was going to be very difficult, right? You mentioned Ohio State came back, so did Oklahoma. Do you think they were freaking out a little bit at halftime of some of these games?
I would think the one that caused them the most angst on Saturday was the Big Ten championship game, because if Wisconsin would have won that game, and my Twitter account is filled with people who don't believe this, but I promise you that if Wisconsin had won that game, they would have considered the 2-loss Big Ten champs, in addition to 1-loss Oklahoma, the Big 12 champ, and Ohio State. It's just, there's a different method to this madness, the way the committee works. And when you have 13 people sitting around a table trying to figure this out, anything can happen.
On Friday, we had Paul Feinbaum on the podcast, and he was very critical about the lack of transparency in the selection process.
I just wish somebody would raise more of a stink about this, because I just think it's not fair to tens of millions of college football fans to not get a straight answer from the people who are determining the most important part of the season.
What would you have liked to known this year about the process, especially on that final session?
There's a lot of discussion about that, and I see the points on both sides, because having been through 5 mock selections myself, I have a really good understanding of how the process works when the door is closed. That being said, I would love to know more on the final ranking, a way to quantify how close it was between LSU and Ohio State. I wish that we could poll each of the committee members and know who they thought was number one. The way it's actually done is by secret ballot. I mean, they literally have privacy screens on their laptops in that room, so you can't even see what the person next to you is voting for. And it's done by cross-country scoring. I don't know if people are familiar with that. If you've ever run cross-country, you get, you know, like, it's like 1 point for third place, 5 for second, or however they do it, and then the most points wins the race. And that's how it's done. So it's not like you're sitting around the table and they say, oh, it was a 10-3 in favor of LSU for the number one spot. That's just not how it works. But I think that there should be a way to help quantify that. And I would love, I asked this year again, every year I ask if I could sit in with the committee for a quarter and just watch the games and see how they interact. And again, they said no, they don't want to violate the sanctity of the room. But I do understand that when they're in there and the door is closed, they do have to protect the committee members in terms of letting them be free to discuss these teams the way that they do, that they feel comfortable with. Because if you have a reporter in there on the final week, it certainly changes the way people say things. I mean, I walk in there every year for a couple of minutes while they're watching games. And Chris Howard, he's the president of Robert Morris University. He's an Air Force guy. And he's like, Heather, we're so nervous when you come in here and say anything. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like, you guys are just watching football. Ray Odierno is a former chief of staff of the United States Army. He's figured out far more complicated things for this country than who the top 4 football teams are. It's like, we're talking about sports, guys. You know, everybody relax.
With Joe Burrow potentially playing his old team, with Jalen Hurts making it to the playoffs while Alabama didn't, there's so many great storylines with these 4 teams. What is your favorite going into the college football playoffs?
Oh, that's a great question. I do love the story of the transfer quarterbacks. I mean, this transfer portal thing changed the entire college football playoff race this year. And it's very interesting to see what kind of an impact it will have in these semifinal games with those quarterbacks. Justin Fields as well, outstanding for Ohio State. So I think that those storylines are really good and very compelling. But I also think it's interesting just to watch LSU and Ed Orgeron. And, you know, if you are not an Alabama or a Clemson fan and you're in the anybody else but them, LSU is such a likable team. I think that Ed Orgeron has really captured a lot of fans across the country that may not otherwise have been paying attention. And it's because of him and his character.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, what Eli's return for the Giants could mean for his legacy. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/passtheprotection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now is your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/passtheprotection. Here's another story I want you to know. Tonight, the 2-10 New York Giants take on the 5-7 Eagles on Monday Night Football. Now, the stakes are obviously a lot higher for Philadelphia because thanks to the fact that the NFC East is like one of those gift exchanges where everyone brings stuff from their house they don't want and no one actually wants to win, they're still in playoff contention and desperately need this W. But while it seemed at one point like the Giants would be playing for nothing tonight, aside from trying to avoid tying their franchise record for the longest losing streak in club history, which is 9, that changed last week when news emerged that the rookie Daniel Jones had a high ankle sprain and would be out with an injury, paving the way for longtime quarterback Eli Manning to return. So this is a big deal for a couple of reasons, none of which have anything to do with the Giants' prospects this year. As you may already know, over the course of 15 seasons, not counting the playoffs, Elisha Nelson Manning IV is 116-116. This game could very well be his final start and would tilt his record in one direction. Now, you could argue that shouldn't affect his legacy, which was largely shaped by his success in the postseason, nor his oft-debated case for the Hall of Fame, but it will surely affect perceptions. And perhaps it'll make it easier for Eli to ride off onto the New Jersey Turnpike after this year. Because while we don't know if he's going to retire, we do know he didn't want a bunch of pomp and circumstance. You may remember how, 2 years ago, when Manning was unceremoniously benched for backup Geno Smith, the decision snapped his streak of 210 starts. But he rejected the suggestion that he should trot out for a series just to maintain the record. Eli has never wanted to be a figurehead or an elder statesman. He just wanted to play quarterback for a team that needed him. And now, fate has given him the opportunity to do just that. Maybe for the last time. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.